Atra,
Atra,
Te,
Te,
Katayishye,
Katayishye,
Amum,
Amum,
Itihasam,
Itihasam,
Puratanam,
Puratanam,
Puranjanasya,
Puranjanasya,
Charitam,
Charitam,
Nibodha,
Nibodha,
Garata,
Garata,
Mama,
Mama,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Nibodha garato mama,
Nibodha garato mama,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Nibodha garato mama,
Nibodha garato mama,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Atrute katayishyemam. Atrute katayishyemam, Atrute katayishyemam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Nibodha garato mama,
Nibodha garato mama.
Atrute katayishyemam,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Itihasam puratanam.
Nibodha garato mama,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Atrute katayishyemam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Itihasam puratanam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Nibodha garato mama,
Nibodha garato mama.
Itihasam puratanam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Puranjanasya charitam,
Nibodha garato mama,
Nibodha garato mama. Atra,
Atra,
herewith,
herewith,
te,
te,
unto you,
unto you,
katayishye,
katayishye,
I shall speak,
I shall speak,
amam,
amam,
on this subject matter,
on this subject matter,
itihasam,
itihasam,
history,
history,
puratanam,
puratanam,
very old,
very old,
puranjanasya,
puranjanasya,
in the matter of puranjana,
in the matter of puranjana,
charitam,
charitam,
his character,
his character,
nibodha,
nibodha,
try to understand,
try to understand,
garata mama,
garata mama,
while I am speaking,
while I am speaking,
translation. In this connection, I wish to narrate an old history connected with the character of a king called Puranjana. Please try to hear me with great attention. Purport. The great sage Narada Muni turned to another topic, the history of King Puranjana. This is nothing but the history of King Prachanabarhishat told in a different way. In other words, this is an allegorical presentation. The word Puranjana means one who enjoys in a body. This is clearly explained in the next few chapters. Because a person entangled in material activities wants to hear stories of material activities, Narada Muni turned to the topics of King Puranjana, who is none other than King Prachanabarhishat. Narada Muni did not directly deprecate the value of performing sacrifices in which animals are sacrificed. Lord Buddha, however, directly rejected all animal sacrifice. Srila Jayadeva Goswami has stated, Nindasi yagya vidhir ahaha shuti jatam. The word shuti jatam indicates that in the Vedas, animal sacrifice is recommended, but Lord Buddha directly denied Vedic authority in order to stop animal sacrifice. Consequently, Lord Buddha is not accepted by the followers of the Vedas. Because he does not accept the authority of the Vedas, Lord Buddha is depicted as an agnostic or atheist. The great sage Narada cannot decry the authority of the Vedas, but he wanted to indicate to King Pachinabarhisha that the path of Karmakanda is very difficult and risky. There's more to the purport. I'll just pause here and comment a little and then go on. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Simani Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Yurvishishya Sambhavya. So Narada has been criticizing the animal sacrifices that the king is performing. But now he says, I'm going to tell a story. So it appears that the pressure is being taken off the king in this direct confrontation of criticism by the great sage. But actually the story will be a story of a person who is actually exactly like the king. But it's become a story, and so we'll hear this long allegory. Allegory means you tell us a story, some fictional story, but at each point there are symbolical meanings to the different events. So reaching a higher truth. So this is done because for the conditioned soul, for one thing, he has a natural tendency to hear some kind of interesting story with adventures in it. Especially a materialistic person likes to hear about men and women coming together and war stories. So actually the whole Mahabharata is about war stories and palace intrigue and romance also. But in it, there are transcendental instructions at every step, and especially the Bhagavad Gita is within the Mahabharata. After the whole Paranjana story is finished, there's another verse in purport about the nature of stories, and it's called indirect method of instruction. And it's considered, in one sense it's considered lower, but it's considered very effective type of instruction because people are low, on a lower level, people meaning ourselves. And so it is often used by sages, either by some extended allegory or, as we know even from Prabhupada's preaching, at every moment he may briefly tell some little anecdote and our attention becomes right away picked up. We hear he say something, when I was a householder, my child once said to me, and we become very interested. And then there's always some transcendental instruction. But taking advantage of the natural tendency, this allegorical method is used. So not only it's direct criticism of the king, which is now being told in a story form, but it's also a way that Narada, Prabhupada says, he did not directly deprecate the value of performing sacrifices. So he said to the king, why are you doing this? These animals will come back in the next life and they can destroy you. But he didn't say, actually these sacrifices are all nonsense and they should be stopped. Because, as we were mentioning in previous classes here, there's provision in the Vedas for this. So we should not think that we are more intelligent than the Vedic knowledge. Even if we go to the relevant parts of the Vedas for the most important instructions, we cannot, in the name of being advanced, criticize the Vedas themselves for teaching these other things according to time and place. I remember once on a morning walk in Bombay, Jehu Beach, Prabhupada was talking with Dr. Patel and the others. And some of those Indian gentlemen, they were followers of a popular teacher, Swami Narayan, who appeared many years ago. He's supposed to be, they considered him, they say, like Lord Chaitanya. So he had written some verses, and Dr. Patel was reading these verses. And in one part he said that I am against all animal killing, and then he said something about I completely reject whatever is in the Vedas about animal killing also. So Prabhupada said, this is Buddhist. And the doctor became quite upset. He said, no, he's not Buddhist. He's Vaishnava. And so they went back and forth, and Prabhupada was adamant. He didn't concede anything. He just kept making this point that you can't reject what's in the Vedas. You can't be superior to the Vedas. Of course, we don't support animal killing in any way at all. But in the name of carrying out that nonviolence and teaching it, we don't kick out Vedic instructions, but we understand them according to time and place. So by bringing it up in this context, it may appear that this is another reason why the king turned, why Narada turned to allegory. Because he wanted to be very thorough. He wanted to really, he wanted to stop this animal sacrifice performed by the king, who he thought was a candidate for transcendental life. So he thought, I best do it this way. Going on with the purport. Foolish persons accept the difficult path of karmakanda for the sake of sense enjoyment. And those who are too much attached to sense enjoyment are called mudhas, rascals. It is very difficult for a mudha to understand the ultimate goal of life. In the propagation of the Krishna consciousness movement, we actually see that many people are not attracted because they are mudhas, engaged in fruitive activity. It is said, upadesho hi murkhanam prakopaya nishantaye. If good instructions are given to a foolish rascal, he simply becomes angry and turns against the instructions instead of taking advantage of them. Because Narada Muni knew this very well, he indirectly instructed the king by giving him the history of his entire life. In order to wear a gold or diamond nose pin or earring, one has to pierce the ear or nose. Such pain endured for the sake of sense gratification is endured on the path of karmakanda, the path of fruitive activity. If one wishes to enjoy something in the future, he has to endure trouble in the present. If one wants to be a millionaire in the future and enjoy his riches, he has to work very hard at the present moment in order to accumulate money. This is karmakandiya. Those who are too much attached to such a path undergo the risk anyway. Narada Muni wanted to show King Prachinabarhisha how one undergoes great troubles and misery in order to engage in fruitive activity. So he wants to stop the karmakandiya, religious practice. So Prabhupada is giving us a preview of the story. The story is going to show that King Puranjana, in the name of being a big sense enjoyer and planning a life of wonderful pleasures for all the senses, and tasting and hearing, enjoying sex, and yet his story turns out to be a story of great suffering and defeat. So this is actually the result of the karmakandiya, that you work hard and suffer for some pleasure, and then actually that pleasure is also vanquished. Because everything depends on the body. And that's a very fragile thing. Like the poet Govindadas sings, what is this life. The life is just like a drop of water on the lotus. It may slide off at any moment, but everything is being banked on that. All work is on the basis of the body. So as soon as the soul can leave the body at any moment, just by a little disruption, and then everything is finished. Whereas work done for spiritual benefit, it doesn't appear materially in all its advantage, at least to the materialist. He doesn't see it at all. And sometimes the devotee may also wonder, what is my advantage spiritually? I see I have some disadvantages materially. What is my spiritual advantage? But even though the soul is separated from the body, and the body is finished, and all his material work is completely negated, the soul is not. There have been so many billions and billions of human beings, what to speak of other living entities, but just consider human beings on the planet. And their lives are, they're just as if they didn't even live them now. People who lived in different countries and empires, they had children and families, and they had dreams, and they worked and everything. And then they're all just gone. The Romans or Egyptians or wherever they lived. And there's no trace of almost all of them, except for a few things in history, a few kings here and there, who also don't benefit by the histories. But most people, it's not even any record that they even existed. Now, Krishna says that also when he was advising Arjuna not to lament. He said, okay, you're living now, but previously you were not manifest as a living being. And in terms of time, that was almost all time, you were never manifest. So that's like the normal situation, that you don't exist. Now, you have come up, you're existing. Then after you exist, you'll go back to being unmanifest. So regardless of whether you believe in a soul or not, your life is very temporary. And why lament about this small thing and its loss? Usually we are upset when something normal gets disturbed. Something that we think is supposed to happen, or something that's arranged in a nice way. Then if it gets disrupted, then that's the cause of our being upset. But if actually the fact of our non-existence is the normal, ongoing, natural thing, then why get upset? And if you do get upset, it's unreasonable of you, and it won't change things anyway. It's inevitable. These are some of the philosophical attitudes which would make one be not so inclined to work very, very hard and put all his energy into this spot life and work painfully. And so Narada is going to show very graphically the different hard times of the Karmakandiya worker. And just to remind Paranjana, and then to teach him of the alternative. Prabhupada says, a person who is very much attached to material activity is called Vishayi. A Vishayi, an enjoyer of Vishaya, which means eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Narada Muni is indirectly indicating through the story of King Paranjana that eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are troublesome and risky. Now we may say, is he criticizing these things? But how can we live without these things? He's criticizing sinful activities for maintenance of the body, and exaggerated importance of these things, which rob a person of his energy and time for the real purpose of life, which is liberation from birth and death, or going back to Godhead. in the instructions of Prahlad Maharaj to his school friends, he talks about this eating, mating, sleeping, and defending also. And he says that we have 100 years at most to live. 50% of that is taken up by sleeping, all wasted. So then it's pointed out that one who's trying to advance spiritually, he tries to reduce these things. He doesn't try to... He tries not to sleep half his life away or spend all his time in fearing and mating and eating, including eating forbidden things, which will bring him so much suffering for killing animals. The words itihasam, history, and puratanam, old, indicate that although a living entity lives within the material body, the history of the living entity within the material body is very old. So Narada says, I'm going to tell an old story. But there's like a double meaning to him saying it's an old story. It's not just like a story that somebody told thousands of years ago, and that's why it's old. But this is a true story, actually. It's a true story. It's not really about a particular king. It's allegorical. If we say, well, who is this man, Paranjana? Did he really live? What did he look like? But actually, Paranjana means everybody. So it's a story which actually is everybody's story. And that story is very old in each of our cases. The story of each of our souls being in the body is an old, old story. And the story of that everybody does it, that's the oldest story in the world. That souls take up bodies and come into these bodies, and that after the death of each body, they take another body. This is the old story. But our societies, in the Western countries especially, are so ignorant that although so many stories are being manufactured, whether they are supposed to be true news reporting or fictional stories, and they try to bring in together so many different combinations to make it novel, hardly anyone tells this story. Although recently there is some sort of sensational interest in reincarnation, and there may be some stories about that, people who had past lives or who knew of their past lives. But that is also not authoritative according to what reincarnation actually is. So it becomes like an esoteric subject, an occult subject. The idea that a soul travels from one body to another. But according to Narada and Vedic history, it's not like that. It's the most natural, and it's the oldest, most common story of what's happening in the world. But it's hidden to the Vishayi because he's so busy just eating, mating, sleeping, and defending. So if he writes a story or tells a story, it's about eating, mating, sleeping, and defending. And that's what people want to hear. If he tells a story about a soul and a body who transmigrated, people say, what is this weird? We want to hear something that really happens, meaning illusion. It's the old story. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Anadi Karama Pale, Pari Bavard, Nava Jale, Taribari Nadeki Upaya. Due to my past fruitive activities, I have fallen into the water of material existence, and I cannot find any way to get out of it. Every living entity is suffering in this material existence from past activities. Therefore, everyone has a very old history. Foolish material scientists have manufactured their own theories of evolution, which are simply concerned with the material body. But this is not real evolution. So, we don't know our story from the past. There are some people who are able to do that, remember some past lives. And sometimes they can give you that information also, astrologers or persons like that. But whether we can tap that information or not, it's there. And this is another example of our ignorance, that we're living just on a little edge, top edge of this story, thinking that this is all we are, this present person I am. and maybe my, materially speaking, my parents and grandparents. But all the different persons we were and different species of life, that's part of our, it's really part of our story. But we have no knowledge of it. If we did, we would certainly become wise. Like Jad Bharat, he had living consciousness that he had been a stag. It's not just that he remembered one particular body back, but it happened to be an animal body. So he remembered that. And he remembered that he had been a great king, and he had been a great transcendentalist, and had almost attained liberation, and then had fallen to become a stag. So with that in his consciousness, he became so serious, as we say, about a person being serious about Krishna consciousness. He was completely serious. He was the most non-frivolous person imaginable, in that he, at every moment, was thinking, I'm not going to fall down this time. I don't want to take another material body. So last time I almost perfected, but I became attached to a deer. This time I'm not even going to relate to people and get diverted, because everyone is in Maya. If I relate to them, then I'll fall trapped in so much different Maya. I'll just pretend that I'm a dumb person, and in this way I'll be able to just meditate on Krishna. So if we had some knowledge of how we've suffered birth after birth after birth, we would be a little bit like that, that I'm not going to do it again. But in the absence of that, we still have the Vedic knowledge, which we have to accept with faith, and we can still become serious. Just because we don't remember even the birth that we had in this body, we hear, birth is very painful, you're packed up in the womb, and you have to come out. And we think, well, I don't have any experience of that. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. So hearing about it, if we're intelligent, we won't do it again. This is why Narada is telling the story. It's not just for the king, it's for all of us. So it's an old story, and it's packed with so many innumerable births and deaths. And this is the, as Prabhupada is saying here, this is the evolution. The evolution of our soul is through different bodies, one after another after another. The soul doesn't change, but we have evolved through the different species. The real evolution is the history of the living entity, who is Paranjana. Oh, I skipped a sign. Foolish material scientists have manufactured their own theories of evolution, which are simply concerned with the material body. But actually, this is not the real evolution. The real evolution is the history of the living entity, who is Paranjana, living within the body. Sri Narada Muni will explain this evolutionary theory in a different way for the understanding of sane persons. So this is an introductory verse, and now the actual narration begins with the next verse about this king, Paranjana. You mean with, even with the purport?
No, not with the purport. It's understandable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the... that's true. You may ask, since we so much seem to need this, why are the Vedas self-sufficient in themselves, or do they need commentary? In one sense, people used to be more intelligent. They could understand things better. Now we're not intelligent, but we tend to be over-intelligent, thinking we are intelligent, and make so many interpretations. So it's become essential that we have an authorized purport. And therefore, that tradition of purports or commentaries is a very solid one in the parampara, that the Vaishnavas have, all the great acharyas have made their commentaries. Prabhupada's purport is based on reading their purports. It becomes necessary, as especially we know why it's necessary. So that's actually part of the scripture, that it gets enlarged by the in each age and clarified, especially as time goes by and people become more dull. In Kali Yuga, there's more and more need for the commentary. You were making a comment, more or less.
Yeah, it's just it just struck me that how important it is.
I guess I raised the question, like then someone could say, well, it's so important. Then these scriptures that were spoken by Krishna, Vyasa, they seem to be incomplete. Why did he leave something incomplete to be commented on? But in the sense that he did leave it, you could say he left it because he wanted his pure devotees to come and also have the privilege of glorifying him further. But it's not incomplete in itself for an intelligent person. About preaching, Prabhupada said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur could have furthered the preaching. He was empowered, but he wanted to leave it for others to do. So Krishna Vyasa, Dvaipayana Vyasadeva, he wrote, and since he knows the future, he must have known that throughout time more and more acharyas would come. And that's the point you were making yesterday about asking, is scripture open to revelation? And so this kind of expansion always goes on and on. I wrote a Prabhupada letter once about that, because he wrote to a Gurukul boy that, I'm very glad you're learning English, that when you grow up you will write books in Krishna consciousness. So I asked Prabhupada in a letter, what are these books that you say your disciples will write, because it seems there's no need for books if you're writing books. And then he said, just as I have, he said the parampara can be expanded unlimitedly, just as already we have so many commentaries, but still I have written to expand it so it can be expanded in the future by my disciples, and it goes on and on that way. So Vyasa knew this. Now there are some literatures like the Vedanta Sutra, and any sutra, they are so sparse that sometimes a verse is just like a syllable, and they really, you can say, lend themselves or almost seem to demand further explanation. But the Bhagavatam is itself a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, but still we don't understand it so well. And just like in this purport, Prabhupada talks about things like Darwin's evolution, evolutionary theory, so that wasn't present then. Therefore it's good that someone comes and comments on it. These are examples of why it needs to be commented on. Yes, it's very important.
Starting that point, like in that story there, and then the story that you mentioned was
stressing what point?
The point that how we it's telling us, like, we've been here before, the passage of the soul and the journey of the soul continually. And it's just very, very nice the way it's sort of tested like that.
Yeah.
And so eventually sometimes it might sink in and we'll be able to act at that point.
We should be very, all humanity should be very grateful for the transcendental literature. If you're at all interested in spiritual life beyond material life, then these authoritative literatures can guide us. And otherwise, without them, how we cannot possibly reach this knowledge, because we're so, in Kali Yuga especially, we're so limited and so victimized by so many things. Say you had a little spiritual interest, which we all must have because we've come to Krishna consciousness. But then, how could you sustain any kind of thought to think about it? You think of someone like Lord Buddha, that he did some powerful meditation to try to find out what is the cause of suffering. So, we can't even imagine what is that kind of meditation. That if we didn't rely on these books and tried to think, who am I? Sometimes we read some of the Western philosophers, they act as if it's never been done before and they're going to do it. Someone like Descartes sits down, well, now let me think, who am I? What is everything? And they go to some deep meditation. But they don't go that deep. They can't go that deep because of all their limits. So to take from what has been given by Krishna, which is perfect, and which is handed down by sages who lived in a time and who had capacities to understand like that, the present life, they could understand the past lives, they could understand the future, tri kalagya, they could understand all times. Not to take this and to say that we're interested in spiritual life and want to figure it out ourselves, is really folly and arrogance. Therefore, that being submissive and faithful, not in a blind way, but in an intelligent way, as Prabhupada says, a sane way, is essential to accept the knowledge. This very point that I didn't experience it, but I want to know about it, so I can't know about it by experience right now. Let me accept the knowledge that it has been happening, but it's beyond my understanding. And not demand that I have to experience it with my senses, which is not possible. And Prabhupada expands that example. He also talks about people who, by their activities in this life, they get into a very painful situation. Gives the example of the person with venereal disease who undergoes a painful operation. And then, it's not like a matter of trying to remember past ages. It's just being sensible to remember what happened a few years ago or less. That by doing a certain activity, by illicit sex activity, you're going to really get in trouble and you're going to have a painful situation. And because the pain isn't immediately present, it minimizes it, it puts it out of the mind. This is our mentality when we don't accept the higher knowledge. Sometimes we speak about transmigration, Krishna conscious, fundamental, someone who listen, appear to, thoughtfulness. Well, there was, in fact, that one doctor, Prabhupada, spoke to a doctor when he was in the hospital. And the doctor listened briefly and said, doesn't ring a bell. He said, what is that bell they're waiting for? I don't know. But it's just like their arrogant judgment. I haven't experienced this. I don't ring a bell. So whimsical as to being the arbitrator of what is knowledge and what is not known. Prabhupada would always say strongly and humbly that this is not my opinion. I may be fool number one, but this is the state of the Vedas. Respect for the scriptures is essential.
The example that you announced in Jagmaraha, it was completely unfrivolous, and I think without how frivolous, even though in these situations you don't want to be frivolous, but it seems that, you know, there's no space and time at all, and dissipating in a frivolous kind of mentality. But how strong is it? What do we have to actually do to be able to maintain
It would seem that one way or another, we have to get some of those impressions that you're saying, they do strike us during the Bhagavatam class or at certain times, but then they go away. Somehow that impression has to be deeper. There's the phrase, vairagya at the crematorium, that when a person goes to the crematorium and sees a body burnt, he becomes very sober and he walks home thinking, you know, why should I be so frivolous? I'm going to be burnt also. But then after he's away from the crematorium, all his priorities seem to change. He forgets about it. But so that example points out how they're not lasting, these impressions. And the other thing is so strong, the tendency to just enjoy with this material body and to take our life as all in all. So somehow or other, more permanent impressions have to start being made. If that's a fact, that we're so forgetful, therefore the program of constantly coming back to hear, at least daily or more than once a day, some kind of fix our life so that we do hear and chant and discuss, rather than think there's something we're going to do, some peak intense experience we'll expose ourselves to, and then we'll be completely changed. Rather than accept spiritual master, accept the process, and just sincerely carry it out, and then we won't go way off and forget everything by regular association. I got a letter from one person. He lives in a city in France. He has no devotee association for different reasons. He separated from the association of devotees. So he said he became completely forgetful of Krishna consciousness and Prabhupada and everything. But then he felt so terrible about it, he roused himself and went on a pilgrimage to Vrindavan. And he said there it was like Vaikuntha. He was chanting and everything, and he was completely enlivened. And then he's writing me after he got back again, so now everything's the same. I'm completely in Maya again. So that he couldn't sustain that experience. I was so intense in being in Vrindavan. Therefore, there has to be regular association, regular practices to combat that, all those materialistic or frivolous activities. And then it's hoped that gradually we'll actually change. Not that we'll be like a desperate person in between Bhagavatam classes and we're just completely nonsense, but that we start thinking like that in a more continual way. Krishna will reciprocate with us to give us that kind of change of heart. And in practical ways, we don't invest in the other things. Like, if I keep investing my consciousness or putting my consciousness into contaminated situations, like go to see a film which is completely contaminating and have association like that, every time I do that, then I'm putting fuel in that fire of agitated senses and mind, which we should live simply. Therefore, either we are actually imbibed in this intense atmosphere of hearing the words of Narada, hearing the words of Prabhupada, That we can't do all the time. We have to work, we have to earn a living, we have to do active things. But sometimes we're doing that. We're just hearing right from Narada, or we're chanting. But when we're not doing that, even those other things that we're doing, which we may consider worldly, they should be as devotional as possible, and at least be as simple as possible, and not be, on the other side, deep in Maya, partaking in those things which are really will agitate us and get us spinning. It's like then we're starting the fire of Krishna consciousness, and then when we're not doing that, we're throwing water on the fire. Then that's like a daily self-destruction. It should be that by hearing and hearing, as Manu was saying, that it's not just during that period that it sticks, but that you start thinking about it another time. About frivolous, we say prajalpa. So especially like nectar of instruction, there are some strong instructions about prajalpa. It's like the croaking of the frog, and the snake hears him and comes and eats him. So if you hear these different instructions, then later in the day, you'll think about it also, and it'll check you from those activities. And that's why a devotees association is nice, because if you don't think of it, someone else will, and they'll help you. And married life is supposed to be for that too, husband and wife helping each other to keep Krishna in the center. I read a statement from Prabhupada's purport reading about Prahlad Maharaj, and Prabhupada said that an intelligent person is always in anxiety that he will not fall from his position. Usually we think of anxiety as something to avoid, but he mentioned it as like a good thing, that he said so like we have this human form of life, and now we're practicing Krishna consciousness, so we should always be careful that we don't lose it or ruin it, what's already progressed. We like to think each day of doing something additional, doing something wonderful, but we're not always able to do that. But if at least day by day we maintain our practices in a humble way and don't do something ruinous, well, that's an achievement in itself. Well, I followed the four rules, I chanted 16 rounds. And he said, I'm not falling from my position. Which ultimately means that you've got the human form of life and now you fall to the lower species. That's the general picture, the lifetime. We shouldn't fall. And as we were saying, that the soul can be knocked out of the body in a moment by some violence, so similarly, it only takes a brief time for a misuse of free will to hamper spiritual progress. We can never stop spiritual progress, but we can give ourselves a lot of trouble. Or we can be our friends, our own friends. We just have time. Okay, thank you. All those are probably.